And good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Sober Trading. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and I'm here with my co-host, Dave Allen, as we bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events for March 3rd. I was going to say 4-4, March 3rd, 2022. Got that right. Good afternoon, Dave.
Hey, how are you, Melody? Happy I Want You to Be Happy Day.
All right.
So please, we're all going to be happy today, despite everything that's going on in the world.
I am happy. I'm always happy.
I know you are.
Mm-hmm. Always. And I'm happy today also because gold is a little bit higher today, although off the high for the day. Right now, the New York spot price after market, we're looking at gold up $9 at $1,939. You have silver down 14 cents, but still over $25 at $25.26. Platinum was up 7 at $1,088. And palladium is up almost 4% again on the day, up 102, $2,862. And the USDX today was up 0.41 at 97.78. And I'm going to give the oil prices here in a little bit. I want to look at them all to see what they're doing. WTI looks like it's down a couple bucks for whatever reason. So, but let's go ahead and get to the paper markets. You had the NASDAQ drop about 1.5%. The Dow was down about 100 points at 33,794. The S&P was down 23 points of 4,363. And the NASDAQ, again, off 1.5%, down 214 points, 13,537. Most of that came in later in the day. Markets were positive very early. Asian markets were actually positive. Shanghai was the only one negative. Europe, of course, was negative across the board. The DAX and the FTSE, well, the FTSE was 2.5% to the downside, and the DAX was down 2%. France was down 1.84%. The bonds of the 10-year yield, 1.85%. Let's take a look at oil. Brent was 111 on Brent, and that was down 180. And WTI was down 2 at 108, So they came off. And, you know, I'm not sure if that was because they were going to release some of the reserves. And, you know, we got that one-day wonder because that's all the oil is going to provide relief for. You know, it's a day, maybe a day and a half, but not a whole lot from what I understand. So maybe that had an impact there, but more and more people are talking about gas prices, Dave. And of course they're talking about, well, you know, I saw gas go up like 15 cents, you know, in a day and 2 days and repeatedly. So it's getting people's attention. They're beginning to feel it. People have been telling me they're now adjusting, you know, how they do things. You know, they don't go to the store 4 times a week. They're doing it all maybe once or twice. They're cutting back on the trips to the store. Even working. If they do various jobs, they're trying to make the jobs more centralized in a location so they don't have to be driving all over the place and using up that gasoline. They're trying to be a little more cost effective. And that's a good thing. They should have been doing that to begin with. But, you know, when things are good, we have a tendency to, you know, not really pay attention to all those dollars and cents in the same manner that we should be. So it is beginning to, people are beginning to feel the pinch. And of course, you know, we're counting the days. We're now at day 8 of the Russian invasion of Ukraine. Oh, that's all we hear about. So much other news is just being disregarded, like there isn't anything else going on in the world that we should pay attention to and that doesn't infect us. But they've certainly they seized a strategic seaport, and they're looking to overtake a major energy hub. And even at the same time as they're meeting, the two sides are meeting in neighboring Belarus for a second round of face-to-face discussions. So we'll just have to, the Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov said ahead of the meeting that Russia would press its military action until achieving its goals, chiefly the demilitarization. I can say that fast three times normally of Ukraine. But he also added bizarrely that it will be up to Ukrainians to choose what government they should have. I'm not sure what that means, but a Ukrainian negotiator said Kiev's main demand was the establishment of humanitarian corridors so civilians can safely leave combat zones. The country also seeks, of course, the ceasefire and an armistice. So we'll have to see, Dave, where this goes.
Lavrov's a piece of work trying to justify his boss's actions. Having a very difficult time doing that, in fact, even in Russian. But turns out the people of Ukraine chose the type of government they want 30 years ago. They voted for independence, and they have elected leaders. Anyway, I found it interesting. Zelensky challenged Putin to sit down with him for talk, saying, I don't bite, Vladimir. Although it seems like a third round of delegate negotiations doesn't seem to be working out. Although they did announce earlier this afternoon a so-called safe zone for civilians to be able to get out of the major cities across the country, across Ukraine, that is, to other Eastern European countries. But with all this shelling going on, I mean, we forget that Ukraine is a big energy provider of Europe, or at least had been, until it was negotiated out largely by the Nord Stream 1 pipeline. And now, you know, heavy fighting going on around other cities where nuclear power plants are, other major energy grids. And it's not looking too promising, although I'm again inspired by the Ukrainian people, Melody, as they fight on, even as Russian troops, I might add, are deserting their posts. I think just learning what the true intentions are here by their commander-in-chief.
Okay. Russia has reported $630 billion in currency reserves. I can't expect that they'd be able to get most of that with all the sanctions that are going on. They did have a couple years building a financial fortress, and $630 billion fortress, to be exact, in central bank foreign exchange reserves. Reports are they didn't expect the G7 nations to go as far as to freeze those reserves, which they did this week. The G7 has locked up nearly $400 billion of that money, according to estimates by the Atlantic Council. Because of sanctions, over 60% of reserves have been frozen. About 16% of them are in France, 13% in Japan, 12% in Germany, 8.5% in the U.S., and 6% in the U.K., and so Now, was that all due to the kicking them out of the SWIFT? Or were these separate sanctions, Dave?
I believe, you know, I'm not exactly sure of the answer to that question. So I'll say both, because it certainly SWIFT would have tightened things for them. Some of the sanctions that have been put on prior to the SWIFT action had begun to clamp down, but I think both of them had an effect. But certainly SWIFT is doing a lot of damage and will do more as the war moves on. Now, we also learned today that at least two of these huge so-called super yachts owned by Russian oligarchs have been seized in the EU. That comes after the sanctioning of those executives. The move to target those assets comes as the U.S. Justice Department announced a new task force that will help enforce sweeping sanctions against these guys, many of whom are close to Putin. Task force will use various tools at its disposal, like cryptocurrency tracing, to track down assets to seize and prosecute those who violate the sanctions. We had French authorities seized a huge yacht owned by Igor Sechin. It's the Russian CEO of the state oil company, Rosneft. And got a 500-foot. The pictures of that were like, what? Something you'd see in a James Bond movie, like a four-story boat of Russian billionaire Alisher Usmanov that was seized in Germany. So these are not good guys, and I'm sure they're figuring out what they can do to circumvent these sanctions. Sechin's known in Russian business circles as Darth Vader. And Usmanov's yacht Melody is a swimming pool in the main deck, accommodate 36 guests overnight, reportedly cost upwards of $1 billion to build. So it does look like the dominoes are starting to fall.
Well, I got a question. What happens to all these sanctions? If Putin did stop, what happens to all these sanctions?
Well, that's a good question. And you know, I'm sure there will be debate about which of them, if any, should be taken off, particularly in the near term. I suspect that when the killing stops, that the sanctions will go on, you know, unless there's, you know, a treaty that involves countries other than Ukraine that, you know, Putin insists upon as a quid pro quo that, look, you know, I'm going to stop the bombing and the shelling and I'll remove the tanks and what have you. But in return, I want this, in particular, this meaning, you know, the removal of these sanctions. I don't know that a lot of these Western countries are going to agree to that right away. I think, I mean, it's certainly premature to speculate too much about it because we don't know where things are going to go, much less end. But I don't think it's going to happen right away. It could be months or even years. I mean, they've been on earlier sanctions had been on Russian officials since 2014, after they invaded Crimea. So they're here to stay for a while, I believe, Melody.
Yeah, well, it will be interesting. I mean, it is. I don't see him stopping. I think it's too far gone. And I can't, you know.
Well, the pictures that they're coming in now as he steps up the airstrikes are just they're just devastating. I mean, you look at what's happened in other parts of the world. I mean, look at Syria, for example, where Putin essentially has been in charge. You know, he's got his puppet Assad there, but that country's cities, which had some pretty historic architecture, just devastated by years of bombing, and not just Russia either, but
Israel did a lot of bombing in there too.
Israel and the U.S. as well,
and the U.S. I mean, that's, you know, and again, I don't want anybody to think that I'm supporting anyone here, but you know, you look at the war at Yemen, look what the Saudis are doing to those people. I mean, thousands of children starving, dead. The people there. But we continue to arm them. We continue to give money to the Saudis so they can continue their war. You know, look at some of these other areas where there's these... And you know what? The world just turns a blind eye to everything else. And yet, innocent people are getting slaughtered and starving, but that's okay. I don't get it. I guess I do, but it's...
All in the name of profiteering.
You know, it's... And no one talks about it. No one brings up these other areas. You know, we can go on. We can even look down to... You know, to some of our, you've got Mexico, you got the drug cartels running the governments, and nobody says anything about that. You know, it's, you know, they kill people left and right. They're drugs. But hey, with this country, we just go ahead and legalize drugs. We'll help them. We'll help them make more money. You know, and then you have, you know, Russia and Ukraine. And, you know, the only thing that's going to happen to Russia is they will have a regime change. Is that what this is really all about, maybe? I don't know, Dave. I mean, we never know the truth of what's happening. And then people are suffering. Ukrainians are suffering. Russian people are suffering. And we're suffering because we're heading into a break. We'll be right back. Please stay tuned. You're listening to Financial Survival.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSE Talk Radio. CommonSenseVoicesOfIntegrity.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Enough of Russia and Ukraine. $88 billion in medical debt on consumers' credit cards. You heard it. Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. This is a pretty big eye-opening report that has highlighted the complicated and burdensome nature of the billing system, the medical billing system here in the U.S., along with everything else, but this is one. The report reveals that a whopping $88 billion in unpaid medical bills are on consumers' credit reports. It also shows that the U.S. healthcare system is supported by a billing, payments, collections, and credit reporting infrastructure where mistakes are common, where people, patients have difficulty getting these errors resolved. The CFPB, Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, Director Copra, had said, our credit reporting system is too often used as a tool to coerce and extort patients into paying medical bills that they might not even owe. The report details how medical bills are often incurred through unexpected and, of course, emergency events, and are subject to unclear and confusing pricing and involve complicated insurance or charity care coverage plus pricing rules. You know, in emergency situations, patients might not even sign a billing agreement until after the treatment. In other instances, patients, including those with chronic illnesses or who are injured or ill, may desperately feel that the need for medical care forces them into accepting any cost. Yeah, I'll pay it. I'll sign on the dotted line. And then when these bills end up in collections, the repercussions are far-ranging, can be very far-ranging. Medical bills placed on credit reports can result in reduced access to credit, increased risk of bankruptcy, avoidance of medical care, and difficulty securing employment, even when the bill itself could be inaccurate. Dave?
I thought that medical bills were forbidden from going on to credit reports, but shows what I know. And this report outlines how these repercussions are especially acute for people from certain communities, as well as people with low incomes, vets, older adults. In particular, the report describes challenges and sources of confusion when a person's medical bills go into collection or are placed on a credit report. Bills may be sent to collectors by doctors, hospitals, parent companies, or groups representing a service provider. So there could be multiple charges for the same visit. And the total billed amount can thus become quickly unrecognizable. So the time and effort needed to, get the legitimate charges separated from the inaccurate ones can just simply become unmanageable. Now, among the other key findings of the report, medical debt affects tens of millions of households. Roughly 20% of U.S. households report that they have medical debt. Gosh, it's a lot. 43 million credit reports have medical collections. 58% of bills that were in collections and on people's credit records were medical bills. No doubt the pandemic made the situation worse. And to the extent people deferred routine care, especially during the pandemic, costs and medical debt are now expected to increase. Interestingly, medical debt more common in the Southeast and Southwest U.S. In part, the report says, because states in those regions generally did not expand Medicaid coverage. Anyway, if you have an issue involving medical debt, they say to contact the CFPB at consumerfinance.gov. List a phone number on that website.
You know, that really is true. I mean, if you look at the cost of med, and you know, if I go get a test or something like that, and I get these bills. It says this is not a bill. Well, I should say statement. This is not a bill. You can't even read. I mean, it's just like, I don't get it.
No, there's just so much information on there.
It's useless information. Information that nobody needs, and lots of times it's just repeated, and then you get three or four or five other pages that are in different languages. It's like, well, I really don't need that either. What a waste. You can't tell me their computers can't, you know, dictate or figure out, they couldn't set it up somehow that, you know, if someone, hey, read English. You know, this is a good learning project. You know, get to read English, and you know, if you can't, well. But I mean, it's just, I wonder, you know, how many of these bills aren't paid because people don't understand them. Don't know. But yeah, those are huge numbers.
Indeed.
Those are huge numbers. Well, this is something we talk about every week, usually in the first segment, Dave.
We did last segment. Week, by the way.
We did? Ooh, no. Jobless claims fell by 18,000 to 215,000 for the week ending February 26, from 233 the previous week from the Labor Department. 4-week average for claims, which compensates for weekly volatility, fell by 6,000. In total, almost 1.5 million Americans are collecting jobless aid the week that ended February 12th, and that's a small uptick. I mean, that is still 2,000 from the previous week. First-time applications for jobless aid generally track the pace of layoffs, which are back down to the pre-pandemic levels, Dave.
Well, tomorrow, you and Butch will be reporting on the Labor Department's release of February jobs.
Mm-hmm.
Expecting that the economy added another 400,000 jobs last month. That's after January's additional 467,000, and December and November up a combined 709,000. Massive government spending and the vaccine rollout jump-started the economy over the dismal downturn of 2020 and early 2021 as employers added 6.4 million jobs last year. But as Melody points out, a lot of those jobs were jobs that had previously been filled, but that were the subject of massive layoffs over the course of the pandemic. So when we see that the economy expanded 5.7% last year, at least, you know, according to the government, we note that it was from a very depressed base. That's the fastest pace at 5.7% since a 7.2% reported surge in 1984, which also happened to follow. Of course, at the same time, inflation at that 40-year high, 7.5% year over year, I would add at a minimum, as reported by the government.
Wow. We talked a little bit about this yesterday, but Jerome Powell yesterday had said that he still supports the quarter point increase in the Fed's benchmark short-term interest rate when the Fed meets again in 2 weeks. Everyone was expecting a larger increase that some of its members have proposed. But Powell, he did leave the door open to a bigger hike in the event that inflation doesn't noticeably decline this year. Well, that's not going to happen. Most other Fed officials have recently supported a similar quarter of a percent rise, while a few have said that they are open to an increase of a half a percent. But I also heard Powell say that it would depend a lot on the Russia-Ukraine situation, too. And that's what I think, you know. I mean, it's funny. It's not that far away. Today's the 3rd, and they're going to meet in 2 weeks. That's a long time, Dave. You know, when you think about what's going on and how much things can change in that period of time, I guess in that short period of time. And that's kind of scary to think about.
Well, you bet. I mean, we're hearing more talk in Washington today, a little bit yesterday, but primarily today it's really ramped up about adding Russian oil and oil companies to the list of sanctions. On the one hand, you know, the U.S. gets only about 4.5% of all its oil from Russian energy companies. On the other hand, Europe, 40%. So it's still cold out there, and if it's not cold, it's generally hot. So although oil is used more for heating oil, a lot more, I should say, than it is for, like, air conditioning, which is largely electric and natural gas. Wee little bit of renewables could still have a big pinch. And that's what some of these foreign policy experts are keeping their eye closely on, particularly in terms of Putin's references to the nuclear button, because it's just that oil money, now that these sanctions are pinching a lot of the other resources, it's those oil revenues that are going to fund whatever is left of this war. And if there's a lot more of it, even if it's just a month or two, which I'm afraid is wishful thinking, that's a lot. But you hear a lot of elected officials now, both parties, saying they're already talking with each other about introducing legislation to force the U.S. To not buy there. So
that's great. But then they need to open up the other things here in the States, too. I mean, it is ridiculous. Well, and you know what, Dave? I wonder, we all knew this was going to happen. If they had put pressure on that oil a month before he did this, maybe he wouldn't have done it. And it's true, if those sanctions would have come on prior to, but then maybe that would be inciting a war to some degree. So I guess it is a very fine line, but what is that line that changes from sanctions to initiating war with Russia? Or is there a fine line, I would
think? Well, I don't know. With Putin, it's just from...
Or with any nation, though. If you're putting sanctions and you know, even though they're doing something bad, or if you did it before they did it, would that constitute initiating war?
I don't know.
Because you're attacking.
It could give them an excuse.
Yeah.
Putin, I think, had resolved that he was going to do this, you know, whatever the world was going to say, either in advance, as we began to see all these troop movements, or now, especially after the die has been cast. As one of our retired generals said today, he's crossed the Rubicon. And there's going to be a lot of difficulty in turning back.
True. And so he doesn't have a lot of choices left.
Yeah.
I guess this is some little good news here. Mortgage rates fall. The average long-term mortgage rates fell this week, still at historically low levels. As we just talked about, as the Federal Reserve prepares to raise borrowing rates later this month, we're looking at the 30-year loan. It declined to 3.76% this week from 3.89%, not too much of a biggie. But the long-term rate a year ago was almost 25% lower at 3.02%. So I don't know when this war in Ukraine is going to really hit the financial markets. I can't help but think that governments and central banks have done an incredible job. Wall Street has done an incredible job keeping these markets together with what's going on. How long they're going to be able to do that, Dave, I really don't know.
I don't either. I hope people are insured. That is with gold and silver.
The last place I'd want to be is in paper right now. And what people don't understand is you can take your funds out. You can put it back in. At least you have it. You know? And you know, Dave, this kind of reminds me of heading into, you know, 2020. There was a lot of comments of things have changed and we're never going back to the way it was. This war kind of reminds me of the same thing. We're not going back to the way it was. There are going to be changes that affects all of us from this, and there's just no going back, and that's where we are entering a new world.
You mean $5 a gallon gas is here to stay?
Maybe. I mean, I think they can lower that if they used our own oil, if we started to be self-efficient. You know, that could go down, but the financial markets and everything else, I don't know. With Russia's invasion and sanctions taking hold, the Federal Reserve Board of Governors is looking closer at how financial firms get access to the payment system. I mean, this has been a big question for Sarah Raskin. I hear the music. We can finish this up when we come back. Please stay tuned. You're listening to Financial Survival. Just one more time.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSE Talk TruthAndEducationRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at DGScoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
Hey, welcome back to Financial Survival. I'm Dave Allen, sitting in for Melody this last segment as she takes care of clients. Call her at 1-800-375-4188. Now, we just started talking, Melody had mentioned, about the Fed Board of Governors looking at how financial firms get access to the Fed payment system. That's been a big question for Sarah Bloom Raskin, Biden's pick to join the Fed Board. On Tuesday, the Fed unveiled its proposed plan, adding that it wants to make sure the process that evaluates new requests is a fair one. The new plan is built off a framework from May of last year. It would create a tiered system and make the process supposedly easier for federally insured lenders. The big banks, the too big to fails, the systemically important. However, entities not supervised by regulators would have to face additional questions. Now, the question of access to the Fed payment system has been elevated during Raskin's recent testimony before Congress, or confirmation hearings, to potentially become a member of the board, Fed board. She's faced opposition from Republicans, including controversy over her previous job at Reserve Trust, which is a financial tech company that was granted access to the payment system. Fed Governor Lyle Brainard and Biden's nominee to become vice chair said, with technology driving rapid change in the payments landscape, the proposed guidelines would ensure novel requests for access to Federal Reserve accounts and payment services are evaluated consistently and transparently to ensure a safe and innovative payment system. One can only hope that it would be a tad more transparent than its investment rules have been for Fed members. Earlier last month, Republicans blocked the vote on whether to appoint Raskin by refusing to attend the vote and denying the Senate committee a quorum. That particular vote was for all five picks for the Fed, including Jerome Powell's chair. But the disagreement, as it had been for the last several weeks, was over Raskin's nomination. Senate Banking Committee Chair Sherrod Brown of Ohio criticized the delay, saying the action hurt the Fed's fight against inflation. Now, the concerns about Raskin include the Federal Reserve, where there were allegations that she'd use her position from that previous previous government job under former President Obama to get benefits for the company. Toomey, who's the ranking Republican on the Senate Bank Committee, said, until basic questions have been adequately addressed, I do not think the committee should proceed with a vote on Ms. Raskin. Not sure how that one's going to turn out, but we'll certainly let you know. Now, interestingly, the Russian Central Bank has announced that it's going to stop the purchase of gold starting April 1st. Although it didn't cite any reason for the action, market analysts believe that the extreme market volatility overall has forced the central bank's hand. The bank did say that any further decisions about gold will be based on its analysis of financial market movements. Now, Russia's move comes at a time of higher gold prices. Its gold reserves have been growing, as the central bank has been a big purchaser over the past 3 years in particular, adding a reported 158 tons in 2019 alone. Today, Russian holdings are gold holdings are worth a report of $120 billion, accounting for about a quarter of the country's international reserves. At the same time, analysts don't expect the central bank, the Russian central bank, to sell any of its reserves either. Now, this is an interesting. We've been hearing about cyber attacks and how the Kremlin might go at this aspect of life in Eastern Europe in its own country, but it moves to restrict Kremlin disinformation after the Ukraine invasion are reportedly further splintering the global internet. A universal internet where everyone can access the same messages and services is slipping out of reach as Democrats like Ukraine falter and governments like Russia limit usage. Social media executives have warned against the dangers of a balkanized internet for years, as many nations like Russia, China, India, Kazakhstan, Belarus, Ethiopia, and Turkey have all limited access to their citizenry. In China, for example, American apps like Facebook and Twitter are just blocked. Cutting off countries can help dictators like Putin and Xi Jinping win. Democracies, it's like the U.S., it's easy to focus on the harms of big tech and look to the government for answers. But what we're seeing with Russia and Ukraine is a return to some of the formative ideas around how the power that the internet brings to individuals needs to be a focus. Thus, authoritarian countries plow ahead with their own visions for the internet as the U.S. and Europe search for alignment on privacy, AI, competition, the extent there's any, content moderation, and cybersecurity regulations. Well, good luck with that. Now, in today's Wall Street on Parade, Pam and Russ Martins observe that every time crude oil rises by another 10%, Putin believes he can continue to finance his bombings of residential neighborhoods in Ukraine even more. On October 1st last year, Wall Street Journal reporter Georgi Kanchev wrote, oil and gas sales contribute to as much as one-fifth of Russia's GDP, while fuel and energy products make up the majority of Russia's exports. The financial sanctions that the European Commission, the US, UK, and Canada have imposed on Russia have already had a crippling effect on Russian stocks, the Russian ruble, and major corporations there, their willingness to their willingness to continue doing business with Russia. Yet, the soaring price of crude oil and natural gas is giving Putin a feeling of optimism about his invasion of Ukraine, as we talked a little bit about last segment. The U.S. imports Russian oil for about 4% of our energy use. At the beginning of this year, Brent crude was trading at $78 a barrel. Yesterday, it was trading at $113. It's an increase of 45% in 2 months. Now, unfortunately, the higher the price of crude climbs, the tougher it will be to rein in Putin's murderous instincts to grab his neighbor's land and resources and offing their people using military force. But Martins point the one major weapon the U.S. hasn't yet deployed against Putin. It's interesting, and it's larger than the 44 million in Ukraine who've risked their lives for the past 8 days to fight for their country against an invader hitting them from land, sea, and air. The Martins talk about the 46.7 million retirees in the U.S. who are financially incentivized to engage in an energy war with Putin because they live on a fixed income for the most part and can't afford to see their monthly utility bills rise or pay more at the pump for gasoline. These are the same folks who have the time, ability, and social networks to engage in a meaningful effort to trim energy use and thus bring down the price of oil and natural gas. According to the University of Michigan Center for Sustainable Systems, the U.S. accounts for 5% of the world's population, but consumes 17% of the world's energy. That means a serious concerted effort to trim energy use in the U.S. could have a meaningful impact on Putin's funding for his war in terms of the demand for and the price of those fuels. The Academy of Natural Sciences at Drexel University in Philadelphia has a list of 40 ways to reduce household energy use. The Martins have adapted these 6 recommendations for retirees here to deploy on behalf of themselves and to recommend to family members. First, they say replace all incandescent bulbs in the house with LED bulbs, which use an estimated 75% less electricity than incandescents and lasts 25 times longer. Next, shut down all computers when leaving the house and at night. Common sense, right? Send a text to family members and tell them to do the same. Third, turn off all lights when you leave a room. Often do it. Fourth, adjust the heater temperature 1 or 2 degrees lower. Depending on where you live, the air conditioner temperature is 1 or 2 degrees higher. Each degree saves about 10% in energy use. Then if you buy a new appliance, look for the Energy Star label, which is a federal guarantee that it uses less energy. For example, the Energy Star washing machine uses 25% less energy and 45% less water than conventional ones. And last but not least, always put a lid on a pot to boil food quicker in order to use less energy. Boiling large potatoes, for example, to make potato salad takes 45 minutes without a lid and just 25 minutes with a lid. Didn't think you're ever going to hear these tips from us, did you, ladies and gentlemen? Well, the Natural Resource Defense Council has other good tips for practical ways to reduce energy, like the clothes dryer. It's one of the largest energy users in the home, often consuming as much as a new refrigerator, dishwasher, and clothes washer combined. They say after air dry clothing, when possible, and when you have to use your machine to dry, clean the lint filter after every use. Use the auto dryer moisture sensor setting if you have one, and don't add wet items to a load that's already partially dry. And then if you want to stream movies and use services like Netflix or YouTube, well, consider buying an internet-ready television or a small add-on device like Apple TV, Google Chromecast, or Roku box, which uses very little power. If you add up all the gaps around windows and doors in an average American house, you have the equivalent of a 3-by-3-foot hole in the wall. So caulk and weather strip to seal off those air leaks, and use Window Buddy to seal gaps around the loose window panes and stop heated or cooled air from escaping under doors by attaching the sweeps or the shoes to their bottoms. Retirees, they say, should also have a nice long conversation with their grandchildren in college. The Sustainable Campus Program at Cornell University says whether you are working on campus or remotely, you can quickly power down your workspaces before a break. They say in 2019, Cornell students and staff who shut down before the winter break were able to save 1.2 million kilowatts of electricity and over $100,000. That's impressive. That's equivalent to eliminating the energy use of 98 homes' energy use for 1 year, growing 14,000 trees, switching 32,000 light bulbs to LEDs, or charging 108 million smartphones. That's a huge impact. Burns point out that Putin's military threat's related to his need to keep the globe addicted to fossil fuels to solidify his authoritarian rule in Russia's oil and gas economy. Putin's a former KGB official who clearly has no moral compass, but does have power over more than 6,000 nuclear warheads. After stating publicly for weeks that he has no intention of invading Ukraine, Putin's invaded multiple cities, destroying parts of many of them, over the past 8 days after raining bombs down on them and the Ukrainian people. After repeating in recent days that civilian areas wouldn't be targeted, Putin's now heavily bombing residential areas, killing innocent women and children. Yesterday, Linda Thomas Greenfield, the U.S. ambassador to the U.N., told an emergency meeting of the U.N. General Assembly that Russia is now moving lethal weapons into Ukraine. They're moving, if not using cluster munitions and vacuum bombs, she said, that are so horrific their use against civilians is banned by the Geneva Convention. She also said that Russia's bombed residential apartment buildings, bombed sacred burial grounds, and shelled kindergartens, orphanages, and hospitals. Russia has spurred mass hunger and caused so many to flee their homes, the latest UN estimates are marching toward 1 million refugees. She added by thanking the countries who've opened their borders and their hearts and their homes to those fleeing Ukraine. An entire generation of Ukrainian children may be permanently traumatized and emotionally scarred, if not permanently separated from their homes, as a result of the actions of this one man's megalomaniac ambitions. Every person of conscience, including those living in Russia, needs to do their part to stop this dangerous man. That's all the time we have for today's program. I'll be back next Tuesday. Melody back tomorrow with Butch. Also, be on the lookout for our weekly blog and your email inboxes in the AM. Thanks, as always, to our engineer, Todd. And, of course, to you, our listeners, for tuning in to Financial Survival. I'm Dave Allen. Please, please be safe out there. Have a good evening. Bye-bye.